This program is sponsored by Cane Vineyard and Winery. For more information, go to cane5.com.
Let's go out to eat and get some meat. Turkey and jam, macaroni and ham. Say, do you like steak? I can surely make. If you hear me now, singing loud for me, cry.
You're listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm back for another week of radio in Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today, I'm joined by New Orleans-based artist and DJ, Jay Pennington, better known as Rusty Laser. Jay, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. It's really good to be here. I'm super psyched.
So, let's get right into it. Right. You know, first of all, can you explain to people a little bit about your background? What kind of music do you like to DJ? Why are you up here? What's the meaning of life? Simple questions.
Yeah. My DJ name is Rusty Laser, like you said, and that's kind of the reason why I'm in New York. I'm up here with an artist named Nikki DeBee, who is a bounce artist from New Orleans and part of the sort of larger community of bounce musicians that I work with, and he's a really talented, really fun dude, and we're here with about three dancers to just sort of rip up about 9 shows in 5 days or something like that and make a mess out of New York and go home. And there was other things you asked me.
Well, before we get to that, you know, for listeners out there, I've had Big Frida on the show before, but maybe for listeners who aren't familiar with bounce, can you explain what it is?
Bounce music is like like the New Orleans version of booty jams, you know, of what you get when you think of like Two Live Crew from Miami, that, you know, the bass music from Miami, or, I mean, if you're familiar with these kinds of things like hyphy from San Francisco, or Juke from Chicago, or Jit from Detroit. These are all like the 808 drum machine inspired, very low rumbly bass things that people tend to like, you know, they tend to make people go crazy. And in New Orleans, ours is unique because it's, instead of being focused on the DJs and the sort of DJ culture, it's focused on actual rappers and people who write songs, and the producers tend to create songs as opposed to making just break beats that sort of meander around pop hits or something. So you end up with this, we've ended up, you know, after 22 years of bounce music existing, with a culture that's like very dedicated to songwriting and craftsmanship and making things really pop, and really it's live music predominantly, and very much like a crowd energy booster kind of thing. You know, it's really about moving and about shaking your body around.
Your booty in particular.
Indeed.
Your derriere. So you started something called Airlift. Can you explain what it is and how it came about?
Mm-hmm. The New Orleans Airlift is a sort of not-for-profit that a friend of mine, Delaney Martin, and I started right after Katrina. It was about 2006 before we sort of got it moving, but the idea initiated when we went to Berlin. We met up in Berlin after Katrina. I went there to sort of clear my head, and Delaney was traveling. And I just went there because I wanted to be in a city that functioned, and I realized really quickly after I got there that I could just do things. I could just find my way into it. And being from New Orleans, I was able to just start playing music. I wasn't really much of a DJ at that point. I was like, this is fun, and I should just play music for people and they'll like it. And they did. It was a lot of New Orleans stuff, a lot of like New Orleans hip hop and rap and brass band music and all kinds of things that I thought people could relate to. And I started traveling kind of outward from there and doing that all over, and it just became my way. But the Airlift was this other life that Delaney and I kind of tapped into, this realization that New Orleans artists back at home didn't really have the audience share that they used to have. You know, there just weren't that many people, and there were kind of more artists because we were willing to come back, kind of more artists than there were audience. And so we were going to each other's shows, but we weren't able to work as musicians and stay in it and just work, you know, like we used to before Katrina. So the idea was, let's help New Orleans artists get out of New Orleans, go other places, make their money the way I was doing in Berlin, make their money and bring it home so they can stay in New Orleans, as opposed to, you know, just sort of floundering around, getting a regular job, you know, not taking your art and your music and your culture really seriously as a viable way to survive. And then it became, well, this is really working. And we took 20 people to Berlin, and we were with their help. I mean, people, everyone in the group that wanted to go wrote grants, got their grant money, was able to go on their own situation. And it was really good. And then we turned that idea upside down and said, well, we still need content for this project. For it to be viable, we need a lot of like credibility. And we started bringing artists to New Orleans to collaborate, specifically to collaborate with New Orleans artists. It's kind of the mandate that people don't just come and sort of, you know, vomit up their art on New Orleans, but that, you know, they come and share it with everybody else, and it becomes, you know, we all grow. And we've seen it just explode. It's meant that a lot of artists have been able to go to other places, have people in those places that know them already because they've come to New Orleans and collaborated, or, you know, just kind of generally allow the outside world a peek at really what people are about. And every project since then, whether it's bounce related or visual arts or whatever, has been mandated by those things, by the import export of artists and collaborative work.
Let's talk about a recent airlift project, also known this project in particular, the Music Box.
Right.
The formal name, which I have trouble pronouncing.
Can maybe I say
you can,
it?
Yeah, mm. Can you please say it for me?
This is a Cali Curry, which is the Swoons' real name, the artist Swoons' proper name. This is a Cali invention, and she likes cute names. So Dithy Rambolina is how you pronounce it.
There is no way I would ever be able to pronounce that properly.
It's predicated on the idea of the word dithyram, which is like a Dionysian, you know, dance, a reveling, you know, kind of spirit, and then Balina, which is just cute, you know. This is like how Cali works. And what it is the overarching concept of the Dithyram Balina is a giant house full of musical instruments that are all invented and that are all architecturally embedded in the design of the house. That will be the final project that we build, we hope. But in getting to that project, and we had a lot where we tore down a 300-year-old house that had to come down. It belonged to me, and it's next door to the house I live in. Both lots are mine. And we didn't want to let that wood go to waste. We intended originally maybe we would use it for the construction of the big house, but it didn't really seem like viable, and the wood wasn't really that structurally sound. So we took all that wood at Delaney's inspiration, we took all that wood, turned it into a tiny town of about 8 buildings. It's really gorgeous. It's 300-year-old barge board and siding that's just cypress, and it's gorgeous, truly beautiful. And we took all that, made these little individualistic buildings that are, each of them have one or more musical instruments that will go into the final house embedded in them. And it's a proof of concept. It's an experimental phase while we try and figure out, do these instruments really work? Do they work together? What are their tonal qualities? Like, do we have a broad spectrum of tones, or do we all have clanking sounds? Like, what are the things that we can get out of it so that when we do build the final house, we know what we've got, and we know what we're capable of. And we didn't expect it to be anybody's business but our own. We built it. We thought maybe a few people would come to the first performance. We never expected to be turning away 500 people per show per night. And that has blown us away. With a capacity of only 250, that means at least 500 to 1,000 people are coming per show and not getting in, which is amazing to us, you know.
That's wild. Well, so
for an experimental music concert, I want to stress that, like, probably the largest attendance I've ever seen for just straight up experimental music concert, not at a festival, not at a whatever, just a bizarre thing that you people are invited to. That's it, you know.
And it's, you know, the original house that was torn down was a Creole cottage, mm-hmm. and you know, you can go actually on the You Look Hungry website, and I've posted some photos of the actual music box, and it's there. There's no words to properly articulate what it looks like, but who are some of the artists that have performed in the music box, and can you describe how some of these performances went?
Well, some of the artists that have performed are broad and varied, and some are really well known and some are not so well known, but they're all predicated on the environment and the community that Quintron, who is one of our who's our conductor on the performances and the writer of the score, friends of ours, people we know, people we admire, and primarily people who know how to listen, because it's a very complex environment. You're in this crazy little town, you can't even hear everything. So we needed people who could take direction but also had initiative artistically. And it's broad. It's everyone from, you know, Dickie Landry, who's a fellow composer of Philip Glass's, to Jim White, the drummer for the Dirty Three, the drummer for Cat Power, sometime drummer for Nick Cave, to a Mardi Gras Indian that's a good friend of ours named Butt, who's part of the Revolution Social Aid and Pleasure Club, to Marshall, LeCount, who is a member of the band Dark Dark Dark, which is kind of a not experimental, but a dark sort of musical, cinematic sort of band. Aaron Warren from the Black Dice, Hummy Drake, a world-renowned percussionist, to Manny Fresh, you know, the guy who basically invented bounce and the songwriter behind almost everything that Cash Money really got known for, the producer behind all that. Nikki DeBee, a bounce rapper. Vaca Radu, another bounce rapper. We had three separate concerts, so the it's very broad what kind of people were involved. And then people like Mashiach Lake, who's a New Orleans musician who does mostly sort of jazz standards and travels around the world doing swing dance festivals and things like that. So it was incredibly broad, and but everybody came to really share, and nobody really came to like be the person that they really are. They came to be part of the ensemble, and it paid off in so many ways. It was a dream come true for me.
So can you describe a little bit about how did they work in this space together? Because you watch Quintron, you can watch videos of this on the I can't pronounce the name again.
Dithyrambolina. Yeah, you can go there, or you know, if you look on Vimeo and you just type in Music Box Winter, you'll come up with like the 15-minute amalgamation of the three performances, sort of highlights of the three performances, plus a little footage of the rehearsal phase, which is always really fun. You know, we have like two rehearsal days before the shows and give everybody a chance, one full day just to noodle and just play and have fun and be kids, you know, and then one full day to really focus on the score and get together.
It seems sort of like camp etiquette, you know, who gets to choose what.
And not the drag queen version of camp etiquette, you know, it's just a totally different reality. No divas on this show at all. The only divas are me and Quintron.
But really, I mean, you know, there's spiral staircases, there's a platform that looks like I don't even know.
Well, I could like run down a couple of my favorite instruments.
Yeah, so what are some of them?
There's a staircase organ, which is the one you're describing. It's a spiral staircase built by Ben Mortimer, who's from Brooklyn. And what he did is he built a metallic staircase that has like little foot pedals, they look like your foot, that you depress as you walk up the staircase or down or whatever. And at the top of the staircase, there's the pipe that runs down, the center pipe that runs down the middle of the spiral staircase. There's a blower motor on the top of that that blows air down through that pipe. And there are underneath those stair steps that you push down with your foot are organ pipes that were given to us by a local church. And as you step on each one, it opens up the valve between the organ pipe and the center tube and lets air come in. And they all have different release rates that Ben has set in advance so that when you step off, some of them last for 30 seconds, some of them immediately turn off. And the ways that the instruments have been used by each successive musician who's been chosen for that instrument have been incredibly unique. Marshall LeCount brought four people standing on the different stairs, working all in concert, and they incorporated dance and movement into it. Plus, he brought clamps, metal clamps that he could then use also to like hold down certain steps when he wanted to, and still be able to move to another one. And you know, as a very broad spectrum of things you can do with it. And he would like put his hand over the end of the organ stop, so you'd get this kind of wah effect that you could modulate yourself. From something as similar as something as simple as that to what I regard as being kind of far more complex, which is Taylor Shepard, who is also our civil engineer. He's the guy who ran all the wire and if you look on the photos and stuff, you'll see what looks like in a normal town, power lines that run around and lighting that's incidental to the environment, like street lights would be. That's all Taylor Shepard's work. That's what he did for us. But he also, and marshaled a lot of the forces that happen throughout the building, but he also built this thing called the Vox Murum, which is a sort of multi-pedaled loop station. It has a bunch of wooden things that you push down to make loops happen. And there's a microphone that comes out as well, and you can mostly, it's the inspiration is to use your voice to kind of create a sound that you can then like loop back and play in rhythmic fashion or whatever fashion you want. And that was Manny Fresh. Andrew WK played that, both of whom, and another musician whose name is going to escape me, but you know, it's really up to you how you want to use it, and they're really unique. And Quintron, you know, gives you the on off switch in a sense, tells you when he wants you to play. Who he's having you play with is up to him. It sort of has these paddles that are saying, like, now you, now you, now you, and then you drop out, now fade, or now bring it up, all that kind of work. And, you know, each instrument, there's 12 more than the one I just mentioned. Each instrument had its own complete unique sound and unique reality and its own, like, you know, profile. And Quintron's job was to really synthesize those profiles.
It's insane. You should watch the videos.
It's like nothing I've ever seen or been a part of before. And we look forward to the final construction. Very expensive, very complicated. But once we get to build this final structure, which there's photos of our proposed design for that, which is Callie's real contribution to the project. Once that's done, I can't imagine where over time that will take us, what kinds of people will come through wanting to use it. We're already getting a crazy request in this project for, you know, singular musicians who want to bring their entire band in to work on something. And, you know, it's really been unique. However, as of June, it's gone. We have to pretty much tear down most of it because it's not hurricane worthy, and it never really was. Neither was the house that was there before. But this is all permitted by the city, and they said, you know, when hurricane season comes, don't be an idiot, you know, and we're going to follow that direction. It's smart. And we're hoping that we can find someone to maybe take the town as a collection, part of a collection, or that we'll take the house, the town down maybe piece by piece and put Callie's wheat pasting work up on those pieces and sell them to kind of generate revenue or something. You know, we have lots of different ideas, but we'll see where it goes.
We're going to take a really quick break, but when we get back, we have so much more to talk about with Rusty Laser. You're listening to You Look Hungry. Keep it locked.
Mink, baby girl, let's ride. That's you right. The number one star. We gon' glide and go straight to the mall and tear down the inside. Proud of Gucci, full link leather. Burberry's cooler, Gucci sweater. 20 inches pop my feather. The Birdman dead, I fly in any weather. Alligator seats with a head in the inside. Flying on the dash, G-Wagon, so fly. Number one, don't tangle and twist it. When it comes to these cars, I am that nigga. The Gucci with the matching interior. Three-wheel ride with the tie in the middle. It's fresh and stunner, and we like brothers.
We shine like paint, daddy.
It's all summer.
Did up boots with a bitch out Gucci suits. Ain't got no
If you're just tuning in, you are listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm still your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm joined today by Jay Pennington, better known as Rusty Laser. We're talking all things about New Orleans and most recently the Music Box. And you want to tell them what that was for the break?
That was my hero, Manny Fresh.
My future husband.
Future husband, financial advisor. Like, pick a role. That guy's probably played it.
Maserati dealer.
Exactly. And that was the Big Timers featuring him and I think Birdman.
Birdman,
definitely. And it's Still Fly. It's a classic. Learn the words, because when I come to your town, I want you to sing along. I'm going crazy. People have got to learn this song. Please get with it.
Every time I'm in New Orleans and I go to the West Bank to Fauteuil Bay, that's my jam. I like to turn it on and crank it up really high. And I mean, I think you, like, every time you go to the West Bank of New Orleans, better known as the Wank, you have to listen to Manny Fresh. It's like weird if you don't.
The West Bank, the best bank.
The best. I think we all know. Definitely. So I want to switch gears. I want to talk about what you're doing up here.
Okay. Yeah. I'm here with Nikita B. I've been here for a couple weeks, and I've been working on a lot of projects for and about his world, and also just DJing for my own pleasure and DJing for, you know, my financial stability, which is part and parcel of my life. And I really came here because we just came out with a video the 13th of this month. It's Nikki DeBee and collaborative work with a producer named Diplo, who, if people aren't familiar with him, he's kind of best known for that, the beat behind the Who Run the World song by Beyonce, or which is known as Pond the Floor, which is a major Laser song, his other project. He also did like a lot of MIA work and MIA remixes. Paper Planes is probably his most notable. He just did an album with Usher, Lil Jon, Snoop Dogg. I mean, pick it. The guy is like on fire. And so it's been really good for us to get a chance to work with him. It was a very spontaneous, very kind of unexpected thing. And thankfully, he chose it as a single for his new EP. And if not, we wouldn't have had the opportunity to do it and the opportunity to put up a video that in 3 weeks is over 500,000 views, which is remarkable for an artist who doesn't even have another video, i.e. Nikki in this case. And it's worked out really well. Most of the video was shot in the music box just to be, you know, weirder about it, just to keep things in my life, you know, all tied together, because I got to rope them all into one thing. Otherwise, I get distracted too easily and I fly off in other directions. But it's been really, really great. You know, it's galvanized Nikki's reality, and it's made a lot of really good things happen. And Diplo's been really, really cool about working with us to come up with concepts and a focus for the video that was really like cohesive and not pandering to New Orleans cheesiness, or like, you know, not any of those things, not just coming in and like, you know, appropriating a bunch of things that he thinks about New Orleans and ripping them apart, but really coming in and saying like, what is important to you, and allowing us to really dictate that has been a big part of it. And I'm pretty impressed with the work ethic and the style with which it's happened.
It's a beautiful video.
It's very pretty as it's all gorgeous. Get out. I have to say, the director, Lil Internet, aka Julian, and the DP on the video, Shomi Patwari from Elusive Media, and Lil Government, the other the stylist for the shoot, all of them just blew it out of the water. And I got to do locations and quote unquote casting, which was really just like parking a camera in front of my street and telling my friend Pierre Pressure to go put his monster suit on, and, you know, like, just getting weird. My pregnant neighbor showed up. She was 9.5 months pregnant, trying to shake her baby out. We put her in the video, just like shaking her baby. And it was just one of those things, like, it was a moment where this director said, what I want to do is remake Juvenile's Ha video, which I think is the best rap video of all time, and really like have that be my mark on Southern rap, period. And we did, I mean, in my mind, we did a very contemporary, very tweaked out version of Juvenile's Ha video, and I couldn't be more proud. Like, that video to me is the video from what I feel about what bounce music is to my neighborhood and to my community. Being at the Manchu food store, which is the best, since this is a food show,
it's the best
fried chicken, period. I mean, really, like, sickeningly good fried chicken. And we were there 1 hour before the Super Bowl, rolling camera, just, you know, if you watch the video, just remember, no one was cast for this video. Everyone just did what they want to do normally, and they just went for it. And that's what it looks like in New Orleans when you just roll up and you have a jam box and a camera.
They also have the best Yakameen at Manchu, I believe.
Can I just say, though, Miss Linda's is the best, who, if you go to the second line, you can get Miss Linda's.
In the shopping cart, right?
She has a truck now.
Okay.
And she always has a green or some kind of neon poster board sign that says Miss Linda or says Yakameen on it. Hers is hands down the best, but in a corner store, yeah, right there, Manchu.
You know, I've asked other New Orleanians.
Corner of Claiborne and Esplanade. I feel like,
oh,
I gotta say that.
You can't say that. You can't give the secret away.
No, you gotta have it. If you go, and you can buy bootleg CDs from the bootleg man who's parked out right in front of, they call him the CD man, and he's parked in front of the place every day from about 1 to 6 unless the police tell him to go. And you can buy bootleg movies, CDs, you can buy all the bounce jams you want, you can buy brass band stuff. It's the jam.
You know, I've asked other New Orleanians on this show before. I've had like Chris Hannah the bartender. I've asked Frida this too. How would you describe to listeners what Yakameen is?
Yakameen, it is like it's like ramen, New Orleans style, with spaghetti noodles, like thicker spaghetti noodles than ramen noodles. And just the saltiest, you know, hangover curing broth in the world. Probably beef broth, I'm guessing. I can't ever tell. With a chunk of meat, some shrimps, if that's your thing, or whatever that you want in it. Chives, I don't even know why. They don't really seem to matter at all, but they're in there and they're crunchy, so that's good for me. And there's green, you know, it's like the only time that kids in New Orleans eat green stuff is probably on Yakimane. And then half of a boiled egg. Don't understand it. It really, actually, to me, having hung out in Japan, it looks like standard sort of Japanese stew fare. But it's not... But it's completely
New Orleans.
And it's not even Chinese. I don't remember seeing anything like that in China. And yet we don't have a Japanese population. So who the fuck knows? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Can I do that? Yeah. Who in the world knows what's happening in New Orleans? You know, like there's no telling. For all we know, some Japanese kid came down, made that for somebody. And they were like, oh, that's good. Let's just keep making it. And it just took off. Like, it's very possible that that's all that it was, you know.
After DJing all night long, or maybe before a show, what are your favorite places to eat in New Orleans late night?
I mean, I love the Clover Grill. That is the first place I ever went to ever in my life in New Orleans. And my friend Luke, who's a bartender in New Orleans, who you should have on the show, Luke Allen, who also plays in Happy Talk Band and works at Mimi's, I had 19 cents to my name. He gave me a cup of coffee and got me a job at the Clover. And that was my first job. It was my first situation. 24 hours, attitude, drag queen attitude, 24/7. It is a mess. And if you step out of line, as in like try to sit down in your chair or try to order your food, all these things are considered stepping out of line, asking for a fork, like whatever it is, these drag queens are going to like put you in your place. And I love that attitude. I love going there for that reason. And it's perfect. I worked there for a while and they literally encourage you to say whatever you want to say anytime, any moment. And they want you to be that way. I'm really sorry.
What would you...
But that was my first choice, you know.
Okay. But what would you eat there?
Waffle, a big ass waffle, and you know, whatever, hash browns. Waffle and hash browns is really my go-to meal at 4 a.m, hands down. But I would say, like, you know, New Orleans is getting better all the time, where there's more and more options all the time for things that you can dive into pretty much 24/7, which is really exciting. They're putting more and more restaurants into the bars that I love, which makes me really happy. I know that the St. Rock Tavern, where I play every Saturday night, has a vegan kitchen now, which is really amazing considering it's mostly crusty punks and neighborhood folks, you know, all kind of mashed in together in this really dirty, sweaty environment. And then there's vegan food and quality vegan food, not just like French fries, you know, but like really good vegan food. There's the Hi-Ho, which is like a, you know, like an old standby New Orleans, you know, dive in my neighborhood, has another vegan, oddly enough, as well, has vegan Korean food now. Which, oh my God, please. I'm really sorry, y'all. Turning that all the way off. vegan Korean food, which is kind of a mind bender, you know? It's like pretty shocking. That's not what you expect from New Orleans by any stretch of the imagination.
Here's a question, because I haven't been living in New Orleans for a little while. Somebody recently asked me, where can I get a really good late night po' boy in New Orleans? Because Verity Mart
is open. It's back.
Okay.
And that's the place
to go.
That's
my answer. Yeah.
I mean, Verity Mart is good. I really love what they do over at Quartermaster, which is right around the corner on Bourbon, and everybody got used to the Quartermaster after Verity Mart got caught on fire. But honestly, I really recommend Mardi Gras Zone in general. Like it was a place that literally, based on the name, like you would imagine, Mardi Gras Zone was a place to buy Mardi Gras beads before the storm. And then afterwards, the guy who owned it, Benny, just started expanding it into first it was a tiny corner store, and then it was bigger, and now it's pretty much a full-blown store with a stone, like a brick oven for making pizza. And they've really solidified as the place that's 24 hours and has the things you want, you know, and I like everything they're making these days.
And you know, when you're in there while you're waiting, you can watch that dude playing the piano, right?
Oh, yeah, Tim, usually, who's awesome. There's the piano on the second floor. You can also buy a bunch of Mardi Gras beads and just throw them at people from the balcony if you want. But they have, you know, health food and things like that. It's not an adequate substitute for a real place that we really need. Like, we really need an actual grocery store in our neighborhood. We have some stuff that's going on, and there is a new place that's the Healing Center, which has a health food store in it as well. But you know, I mean, we're still kind of hard up for just like regular standard issue grocery store, and it fills the gap.
I don't know if you've heard this recently, but Wendell Pierce, who is on Treme and was also on The Wire, has started, I don't know if they're, I think they're going to open in September, but he's basically opening a bunch of sort of healthy-minded supermarkets, some in the Lower Ninth, some in Houma, and around the city. And,
bring it.
Yeah, what
bring
do you think?
I told Prince Paul to do it when he came down, and he interviewed us for a piece for Scion. Prince Paul is the original DJ for De La Soul and a big time producer from early New York days. And he was, you know, he was like, I want to do that. I want to open a store for you guys. And of course, you know, like life goes on and those people come and say things like that all the time. But if he's really serious about it, there's no question that we need it, you know. I do want to put a pitch in for my favorite restaurant, period, because this is like, you asked me about late night, yeah. But my favorite place to eat, hands down, in New Orleans these days is Benichin, which is right across from Verde Mart, right on Royal Street, and it's West African food. It's not Ethiopian. It's not East African. It's basically, the way I think of going there is, this is what New Orleans food would taste like if it was fresh. If it wasn't like this cooked down sort of, you know what I mean? If it wasn't created by people living in a swamp, it would be like this. And it's amazing. I mean, I go there a couple times a week during the day because their lunch special is so cheap, and I split a plate because it's so much with somebody else, and always end up coming home completely satisfied and feeling healthy, which is something you cannot say about most of your eating out experiences in New Orleans.
I do think that New Orleanian chefs are starting to bring in a lot more kind of, you know, local ingredients, especially satsumas. Like, the whole seasonality of things is definitely,
I look at
becoming
it,
more.
Yeah, focused. It seems like that's sort of a boutique-y kind of thing where people are doing it almost as like a novelty, you know, but not as a convention. Like, I want to see healthy food, of course, being like propagated throughout the city all the time, 24 hours a day. And I know we came to your house where you made Frida and I a really delicious sort of quote-unquote healthy New Orleans version of what we're used to. The greens were amazing. Like, and you don't have to use big chunks of salt pork that just destroy your arteries. You can use pork, which is lean when you cut it right and, you know, prepare it properly. There's all kinds of ways to like around those things. And if I could have any contribution to New Orleans in terms of gastronomically in my lifetime, I would love to see people eating properly, like eating the same stuff. You don't have to change all the ingredients on people, although a little bit more green in people's diet would certainly help. I have yet to meet a bounce artist or dancer who eats anything green besides what's on a hamburger. And it sort of scares me. It really literally scares me, because I feel like this is how, you know, this is how life does not flourish, you know. Eating bad food causes your brain to rot, you know, and it scares me to think of that as like the norm. But I also understand people want to have what they want to have, and I'd love to see somebody in New Orleans really take the lead on that and try and show people that what they like is okay, but what they like done properly or done better is even better.
Which I think they are starting to do at the Edible Schoolyard. I mean, they're definitely, I think there's 2 to 3 Edible Schoolyards now, and there's a couple other charter schools around the city that are teaching kids a lot about, you know, where carrots come from and stuff like that. But yeah, it comes from the sky.
Yeah.
But my last question is this, you know, Jazz Fest is coming up, and what do you eat at Jazz Fest? Because there's so many
at Jazz Fest
itself.
Yeah, okay.
Like, because for me, the main event of Jazz Fest is food, which is I feel like I can say that because I'm a food person. But
so you guys know I'm making a weird face, and the reason I'm making a face is because I don't go to Jazz Fest.
I kind of knew that you were going to say that. No, I was expecting that.
I've been once. I went to see Drake, and I just really wanted to see what the Drake hype was, you know? And the first time I saw him, it was great, and the next year I saw him, it wasn't so great. But what did I have when I was there? Well, honestly, my absolute favorite of all time of anything that I could have that's quote-unquote New Orleans is a soft-shell crab po' boy.
Oh,
yeah. I love eating those giant cockroachy looking weird things with the legs coming all out. Everything is like fried and crunchy and delicious. I mean, soft shell crabs, the thing, the jam. And so I usually go in for that, and it's, you know, kind of like not really a way to gauge what your thing is at Jazz Fest, because you can get that anywhere. So it's hard for me to say what the jam is, but I'm gonna come down for soft shell crabs.
I would say the jam is crawfish beignets with remoulade sauce.
That sounds retarded good.
There's one.
They're not sweet
spot
at all.
Oh, no. No, they're savory. It is insanely decadent. And it's the only other time I've located it was at the Crawfish Festival.
Are you coming? Are you coming this year?
No comment. I don't know.
If you come, we'll go have one together.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Thank you so much, Jay Rusty Laser, for coming on the show. Thank Where you. Are you performing this weekend so people
oh,
can
yeah,
find out?
Oh, yeah, I should
out.
Do that. Tonight, two shows, one at Beauty Bar in Manhattan and one at the Morgan, which is right around the corner from where we're at, Roberta's. Tonight, that's the late show. 12 at the Beauty Bar, about 2 at the Morgan. And then tomorrow night is Santos Party House in the basement. Saturday night is the Brooklyn Bowl, which is going to be amazing. It's with a band called Shun. That's S-S-I-O-N. They're from Kansas City, but they live here now. And hands down, the most interesting thing you will see. They played at the MoMA. They're artistically one of the most cohesive bands I've ever seen in my life. They're beautiful, conceptually and everything. Playing with them. And then Sunday, we're doing an Easter early party that ends at 9 with Bust Magazine, again, at the Morgan. And that'll have an Easter egg hunt, all lady DJs, and me and Nikki to be.
Do it.
Yeah.
Everyone go. And if Nikki you can't
go. NikkiToBe.com, RustyLaser.com, it's all up there. Don't hesitate.
Check it out in the music box and New Orleans Airlift.
Yeah, there's so much to look up. NewOrleansAirlift.org, DithyRambalina.com, that's DithyRambalina. And then, you know, if you want to come catch a performance, the last one is in June and it's going to be tight. So, you know, go buy a ticket if you're really serious about it.
Book your flights now.
For real. It's not even a joke.
Thanks again to everybody at Roberta's and Heritage Radio Network. I will see y'all next week.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.